At the beginning of Galatians, St. Paul is really angry. In fact, he is livid. If you look at the very opening of the book, after a brief salutation that you would put at the front of any letter, pretty much, Paul lights into the Galatians, beginning at verse 6, chapter 1. "I am astonished that you were so quickly deserting the one who called you in the grace of Christ and are turning to a different gospel. Not that there is another gospel, but there are some who are confusing you and want to pervert the gospel of Christ." Strong language. What's going on here? Well, you see, Paul had traveled among the churches in Galatia, and he had taught them that you did not have to become a Jew before you became a follower of Jesus. They had settled that. He had gone to Jerusalem with Peter, met with James, the brother of Jesus, head of the church at Jerusalem. They had a meeting. They had a council there. And the decision was that if Gentiles, non-Jews, wanted to be followers of Jesus, they didn't have to become Jewish. So that's what Paul was preaching. In fact, he felt like God had sent him specifically to tell Gentiles, "You're welcome here. You don't have to become Jewish first." But then he went on his way, and he gets word that there have been people traveling through the churches in Galatia saying, "Oh no, Paul was all wrong about that. If you are male, you got to be circumcised. If you are female, you have to take the mikvahs, the ritual baths. You all have to keep kosher, keep the food laws, if you're going to be a follower of Jesus." And there are people who are believing them. And right now, they are specializing, as Paul writes, in deciding who's in and who's out. Do you have to be Jewish to be Christian? Can anybody be a Christian without becoming Jewish first? They've gotten distracted. Paul thinks they've gotten completely distracted from their particular job description. Now, by chapter 5, the passage we read, Paul has settled down a little bit, okay? And so, in what you heard, Paul gives the job description of the followers of Jesus. They are to be trees that produce fruit. That fruit, coming from God's Spirit, fruit is singular, by the way, is love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, generosity, faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control. Now, he contrasts those to the things that are destructive, the things that people do that are harmful and hurtful to other people, and he gives a whole list of those. Fornication, impurity, licentiousness, idolatry, sorcery, enmity, strife, jealousy, anger, quarrels, dissensions, factions, envy, drunkenness, carousing. Those are all things that destroy the fabric of community. But the fruit of the Spirit builds up community, allows us to do what God has called us to do. Now, a while back, our staff parish committee and our ministry table were given copies of a little book called Bearing Fruit. Sounds familiar, based on this passage. And the whole idea was that we as congregations are supposed to be exercising these gifts for the whole world. And as we look at what we do in the church, it raised an issue that was like a question. So that in anything that you did, you would ask, "So what? We are doing it so that something else happens? Or are we doing it just because we've always done it that way?" You know, churches are kind of partial to doing things because they've always done them that way. Once something gets started in a church, it's almost impossible to stop it, even when its purpose is long gone. There's a story they tell about a monastery, and it was an open monastery, open doors and windows, and there was a dog that wandered in and out of the service, so the abbot decided to have the dog tied up outside the monastery. Well, that abbot aged and died, and the monks who knew the reasoning behind this died, and the dog finally died, and the other monks said, "Well, what do we do? They said, well, we have to find another dog and tie it up out there. That's how we do things. That's how we do things in the church, too. Sometimes we lose the sense of why we began something, its purpose. It was done so that some good thing could come from it. So we've been going through all of the things that we do around the church and saying, are we doing it so that the fruit of the Spirit will come out of it? So that our gifts can be shared? One of the reasons that we're focusing on membership vows is that so that you can take seriously the words that you say whenever anyone is baptized, whenever anyone joins, that you will support what God is doing through your prayers, your presence, your gifts, your service, and your witness. That's what we're to be about. You see, we don't provide the seed. We don't provide the ground. God provides all that. We preachers do provide a good bit of the fertilizer, however. And I know you think I'm being facetious here, but I'm not. Because our job, like fertilizer, is to encourage your growth, right? To enhance your growth. There's a writer named Jean Giono. Wrote a little book, thin little book, called The Man Who Planted Trees. It's set around the time of World War I. The main character goes hiking in an area in Provence that is just desolate. The little villages have been abandoned. There is barren land, no crops, no trees, no nothing. And as he's hiking through this area, he happens upon a shepherd who's keeping a flock of sheep on the very edge of some pasture land where there is a little grass growing. He talks to the shepherd. The shepherd invites him to his home. They have a small lunch together, and he notices that as they're eating, the shepherd is taking seeds, taking acorns that he'd picked up, and throwing away the bad ones and keeping the good ones. Said he had about 100 left when he finished. And then through the afternoon, he had a shepherd's staff that had a metal end on it, and he would put a hole in the ground and drop an acorn in. Put a hole in the ground, drop an acorn in. He said, what are you doing? He said, what does it look like? I'm planting trees. He said, I plant about 100 a day. They won't all come up, but a few will. Some will. The main character then goes off to World War I and doesn't return to that area for about 10 years. And when he comes back, he's amazed that that desolate area is covered with trees, some of them fairly small, some of them larger. Within this forested area, small villages were beginning to be built again. Life was beginning to return. He thought, well, maybe this guy who planted trees had the right idea. He went to see if he could find him again, and he found him in the same area where he had lived before. He'd given up being a shepherd. He started keeping bees. Because, you see, it didn't matter how he earned his living, because, you see, he had a vocation. He was the man who planted trees. And so the protagonist talks to him a little bit, asks how he's been doing, what he's been doing. Well, not only is he planting acorns, he's planting birch trees and other kinds of trees. Before the story ends, the main character who's telling it says, sometime after this fellow died, the government sent the Forestry Service out. They had some guests coming, and they wanted to show them this natural forest that had just sprung up. It didn't just spring up, but there was one man who knew what he was called to do, didn't know exactly what fruit would come from that, but he faithfully did it every single day. It wasn't how he earned his living. He was simply the man who planted trees. We are to be the people who plant the seeds of faith in the world. We are to be the people who witness to that faith by our joy and our love and our gentleness and our kindness and our generosity, our self-control, the fruit of the Spirit. A little later, Paul talks about how in the churches in Galatia, people are competing against one another and envying one another. Again, all of which are distractions. We get easily distracted, we Christians. It's hard to keep the main thing, but the main thing is you've been gifted, and you've been gifted to serve. Started a long time ago. It started when God called Abraham and Sarah and said, I'm going to make your descendants as numerous as the stars of the sky or the sands of the sea, and I'm going to bless them. But God doesn't stop there. I'm going to bless them so they will be a blessing to all nations. We are blessed for one reason and one reason only, to be a blessing to others. We are gifted for one reason and one reason only, to serve. You know, we're right in the middle of our membership vows, the prayers, presents, gifts. We're finishing up gifts. In Lent, we'll start service. And then finally, in Easter, witness. But you see, giftedness and service go hand in hand. We are gifted to serve. We serve because God has given us the gifts. The two go together. In fact, all of these fit together. You know, my fear, I've mentioned it before, is that we'll go through them and say, okay, prayer, check that off the list. I can stop that. Presents, okay, done that. Gifts, yep, finished. Service, well, I did that service project once. Yep, that's it. Witness, makes me a little nervous. We'll mark that one off. That's my fear, you know, because I know that's how it happens. A number of years ago, when I was serving in East Nashville during Lent, instead of giving something up, I took something on. It was exercise. I joined the Y. I went 3 times a week, religiously, you might say, since it was a Lenten discipline. And then on Easter, I stopped. It's true. And very quickly, I lost anything that I had gained during Lent, and I had to start back again. That's the idea. These are not disciplines for a season. These are disciplines to carry you through your whole life so that when you produce fruit, it's not that hurtful, destructive fruit that Paul describes, but it's fruit of the Spirit. We do things so that God's love and joy and peace and gentleness and kindness and generosity and self-control can be known to others. And not just others who are around now. I have a good friend named Donald Davis, wonderful storyteller. If you've ever heard Donald, he is as good as it gets when it comes to storytelling. But he was a Methodist preacher when he took up this practice of storytelling. Retired to do it full time, but when he was a Methodist preacher, he served a small parish in western North Carolina, several churches. He tells a story about going to visit one of the members of his church. This particular man was in his 90s, lived kind of in an isolated area off by himself, and Donald would go and check on him every now and again. And one day he came and he knocked on the door and didn't get an answer, which frightened him a little bit, so he just opened the door. That people didn't lock their doors in that place in that time. And he called out for the man's name, and he didn't answer. He thought, oh my goodness gracious, he's come out here and fallen somewhere and hurt himself. So he starts looking around the yard, and he walks into the back, and in the very back, he sees this older gentleman on his hands and knees. He thought, oh no, he's trying to get up, he's fallen, and nobody was here to help him up. So he rushes back there, and he finds that the man is planting a tree. And he sees a number of other trees that he's planted along the way. Donald said, what in the world are you doing? He said, what does it look like? I'm planting trees. He said that older gentleman looked up at him and said, one of these days, we'll be glad we have these trees. Now that man wasn't going to live to see those trees to maturity. Another generation was going to enjoy the fruit of his labor. We don't just work for one time in one place. We simply faithfully do what God has called us to do, to be the loving light of Christ in the world. That's what we say we're supposed to be. sharing the fruit of the Spirit, sharing our gifts in service, so that people coming down the line who haven't yet been born will know the love of God in Jesus Christ. That is our calling. There is no higher calling. Thanks be to God.